everyone, and welcome to episode 23 of the Backyard Banter podcast. My name is Matt Harmon. I'm the host here, and if you've been following the show, you know what we're doing here is we're talking to some of the best people in the football world, the fantasy football writing community, the draft Twitter community, and we have a great member from the latter today. We're talking to someone who used to be one of my many bosses in this here life, and that's Eric Galco of Optimum Scouting. Eric, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. We're, what, 2 weeks after the draft, so it's a little bit of a lull, but I got to doing some film study last week a little bit, and this week too, and some planning for next year, so it's right back to it, which is kind of a good thing. I don't like to take a break too much because then you get complacent and you get lazy, so I'm kind of right back to 2017 stuff as soon as I can.
Nice. Yeah, I was intentionally not asking many of the draft guys to come on the show during the draft time because I know that it can be a very hectic experience. Yeah. And I know, you know, you're involved in a lot of different things. And we'll talk about that, of course, here in a little bit, Eric. But I always start the show asking the guest, you know, how did you come to kind of fall in love with football, or where did that all start for you?
So I was a third string quarterback in high school. Wasn't very good in the sense of, you know, not being tall enough, not being impressive enough to play. And probably my freshman year of high school or sophomore year of high school, I came more intrigued with kind of like the nuance of the game. So I started writing a lot more about it, kind of started Optimum Scouting back in its previous name, my sophomore in high school, just kind of playing around with it, kind of learning away from the playing of football and more to the analyzing of football as well. And I kind of fell in love with all like the nuanced parts of the game. I think that's what Optimum Scouting and I kind of like to do is more off-internet stuff than on-internet stuff a lot, is because I'm fascinated by the agent process. How do you pick a player? How do teams really look at guys in particular for their scheme? And less about who's good, who's not good, who's, you know, stock up, stock down. More about kind of the business of football and how that ties into scouting and how it ties into player evaluation. So early on, you know, I was intrigued by helping agents pick who their clients might be. Helping smaller level leagues kind of find out the under the radar guys or guys that weren't going to make the NFL, but who still be NFL players too. And then certainly the media stuff comes with it, and certainly mock drafts and rankings and things like that are fun too. But I've always been intrigued by kind of the whole business of sports in general, even across football. Football certainly, I guess, my forte, but even basketball and baseball and how kind of the smaller levels or I guess the less obvious levels of sports always intrigued me in the business side of things.
That's interesting. So what's your background other than football, that and does it at all intersect with that idea of the business of sports?
Yeah. So I was a finance major in college and a lawyer at Villanova Law School. So I've kind of have that background, which is, I guess, unique a little bit. But I've always wanted to do, you know, have a passion for football for a while. So I knew I wanted to do a lot of the scouting stuff and certainly – you know, working in sports media is something that pays the bills. And certainly doing stuff off the internet is something I'm more passionate about too, working with all-star games I work with in that sense too. But I kind of lost track of your question. But I think for the most, the business side of things that's always intrigued me is not, I don't want to be an agent, never want to be an agent. Certainly working in a front office would be intriguing, but not something I'm necessarily going for. But I think that kind of my love for football is kind of tied into my intrigue as far as the business aspect of things. And again, kind of going more than just on the field stuff, who's playing well, who's not. I've always been fascinated by kind of how that all intersects with people in the business.
Yeah, I would say that when you start to get dissatisfied with just what's going on the field and you want to know more outside of that, I think that's really a good sign that you're sick with this stuff, you know, as we always say, or like you have that sort of burning passion, that's for sure. I know I've been that way with a lot of stuff, a lot of things, obviously with football. But what you're known for is obviously Optimum Scouting, you know, which is a great, well-known source for covering the draft. You know, I used to work there. Several other people in the industry have worked there before too, and taken their time at Optimum. Kind of take me back to how that all started, or where the idea was born from. I know you mentioned that some of its early days was just, you know, you covering the technical part of the game. But how did it get started as it's known today?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the off-internet stuff, the story I kind of always tell is I was driving someplace, I think picking up Chinese food at 10 o'clock when I was, I guess, almost 12 years ago now, 11 years ago now. And I get a call from an agent. I won't say his name because I think he's still an agent in the industry. But he called and said, hey, we love your work. How much do you charge? That's kind of getting me the light bulb saying, like, you know, let me get to my secretary. I'll get back to you, which I certainly didn't have a secretary at the time. But from there, I kind of realized that, you know, again, that kind of aspect of that side of football was intrigued me. So that's when the off-internet stuff started. I guess 12 years ago now. That Optimum Scouting was kind of formed 6 years ago now. But logistics aside, we started working with CFL teams and AFL teams and agents at that point, and I've kind of grown from there. And always my hope has been for Optimum Scouting is that I want to do a lot of author stuff. I guess more I call it professional stuff, working with people who are paying for the services of scouting efforts and things like that, with the hope being that, hey, in the media side of things, if people want to see what I'm sending to those teams or to send those agents, you know, come to Optimum Scouting and get that. So while I know, you know, the draft coverage is different everywhere, some places prefer mock drafts, and I certainly do those and things like that. I hope with the goal of Optimum Scouting, a lot of ways we're moving more towards analytics. In that sense, guess what teams want. It's kind of always have that, what do teams get value out of Optimum Scouting for? And then we'll go from there to the fan. So again, started out from working off internet mostly 12 years ago with that agent phone call, and it's grown from there and morphed over the years from agents to professional teams to now all-star games, the thing I most enjoy working with, and still agents and teams as well, and then media as well. So like I said, I've always kind of grown it from I wanted to be professionally based off internet to say that, hey, you know, we're not just a guy in our mom's basement, you know, writing about football. We're hopefully doing something a little more technical. And then, you know, we're still in the basement doing that, but it's more so that the media people can kind of appreciate where we're coming from and a lot of what we're doing.
Eric, I'm kind of offended that you would say the mom's basement thing, considering that I am actually, you know, if you listen to the last couple episodes, you know, I'm broadcasting right now from my mom's
basement. I did know that.
So very, very offended that you would say that. My feelings are now hurt, and we're going to end the show. No, I'm just kidding. But I think that is really interesting. So somebody reached out to you first, as opposed to you would think normally, like, that you have.
Oh, no. It was a couple years of me sending stuff out for free. Okay. Something I'm a big proponent of, and I think certainly people who want to work in sports media understand that working for free aspect. Everyone does it, and that's why I certainly appreciate it. But you know, I think again, my goal, and I thought at the time, which I guess I ended up being a little bit right, was that people were so focused on the media side of things, people weren't helping out agents who needed that help too, or smaller league teams too, and it's grown a lot over the past few years, and media people helping out agents or media people helping out other pro teams. But it's something that I thought was a need at the time, ended up being a slight need. And again, sending stuff out on the wings of an angel to people saying, hey, here's what we do. Call me if you have any questions. What more do you need from me? And hopefully that turns into kind of a client down the road. That's kind of my plan. And getting that call was, you know, things didn't snowball from there. It still took a couple more years before we had a lot of clients. But that was certainly the trigger in my head that, you know what, I'm right. There is a need here, and hopefully we can help there too. And thankfully it's grown a little bit. I've had like people like yourself, great people to work with, which I can't say enough. I wrote an article a couple of days ago, just hopefully as a thank you, because it really means a lot. And it's slowly over the past couple of years, it's grown into something that's been much more productive. But we've had people, thankfully, leave for much bigger and better opportunities, which is always kind of the hope. Working with myself and Optimum Scouting, so it's been great to see people like yourself and Alex Brown and Mark Dulgarian and Ian Wharton. The list goes on. A lot of people that have done great things just by kind of getting their foot in the door in football stuff.
Yeah, the Optimum Scouting tree is got a lot of different branches that go a lot of different places, and that's always cool to see in our community, people taking an initial opportunity and getting somewhere else and then going forward, and how all the kind of the lines of the trees intersect and everything is very fascinating to me. And we'll talk more about that later, but I thought your point about the business of sports and kind of like that non-media side is something that people don't really tap into, because I think everybody wants to be, you know, Mel Kiper or Daniel Jeremiah. Yeah. You know, they want to be that guy, but there is a space that for people that are kind of behind the scenes. And I think you've carved out a really interesting niche there. Like your scouting notebooks, or I can't remember exactly what the series is called. Sorry, now I'm forgetting, but like the scouting notebooks, like the things that you're hearing, I can't remember exactly what the series was called.
State of the Draft, I call it.
State of the Draft, there it is. Okay, I'm an idiot. There's like a tons of different titles out there, and I'm bad at names and things like that. So, but yeah, those were really great resources, kind of what you're hearing and everything, and kind of having your finger on the pulse of that. And I imagine that comes from being kind of in the back channels.
Yeah, that's kind of the benefit, right? And talking with people, and you kind of get the other side of the story when it comes to draft time too, which I think people I work with appreciate that. And it's like, hey, you know, we're trying to work a lot with you in the season, and kind of stuff like that comes back too. And thankfully, you know, as years have gone on, sources have gotten better. You know, 3 years ago, I looked back at every, I kind of looked back at what I said 3 years ago, and some stuff was a little more hit or miss. Now I have three or four sources to corroborate instead of one or two, which is great too. But that's kind of the benefit late in the process too. But, you know, my biggest, I guess, well, first off, I don't want too many people going to the space that I'm in right now, because that's competition. That's always that's encouraging, but not always great. There's not that many CFL teams or agents out there to compete with. But I think one of the things I've always done is I like to just be honest with agents and tell them, like, your guys suck. And, you know, Greg Linton, who's commenting on Twitter too, I'll go to all of his guys. I'm like, man, this guy's terrible. This guy's good. This guy's all right. And I think that honesty is something that, like, I didn't want to not do. So whether it's guys on Optimum Scouting's team or things in general, I never try to, like, BS stuff like that. And that's been thankful. I think people I talk to are cool with that, and saying, you know, at least my guys suck, but at least he's honest about it. And that's something that I think that people – and the media don't always do enough and kind of get excited with interviews and stuff like that too. Talking with players, I'll say, like, you do this wrong. And I think our buddy Josh Norris does a great job of that when he's interviewed guys in the past and kind of saying, like, hey, what happened on this play? And he has a great play breakdowns. What happened here? Like, what do you have to work on? And that's something I think people don't attack too much, which hopefully I want more this year and talk to more players, interview more, because I think that's something I'm intrigued by, is kind of going to players and the nuance of being honest with them and saying, here's what from a scout's perspective, at least my perspective, what you don't do well, how can you fix that, how can you explain that. That's something I think that people can do across the industry and players and agents and stuff like that too.
That's a really fascinating perspective that I guess I've never put together, because working for a big media company now and just paying attention to larger media coverage, of course, a lot of it is like fluffing up the player, you know, like always pointing out what they do well with this and that. And especially in player interviews, I know for a fact there's a lot of encouraging from, you know, the higher ups to be like, hey, don't be negative, you know, don't be negative in the interview. Don't point out weaknesses, that sort of stuff. But that's a good perspective, because honesty does indeed matter.
You know, on that point too, I've talked to a handful of NFL teams who I was shocked to learn this even just the past couple of months, is that most NFL scouts, first off, most NFL scouts, not all scouts, are on Twitter under code names, whatever else. They're following people in the media. So don't think that people in the media's opinions don't matter. But I think the most intriguing thing is that they read almost every interview on the internet for a player that they're considering. So that's what we're going to do, a lot more interviews this year as well, because, you know, scouts are reading that and it's intriguing. So I think for people who want to work and, you know, do a lot of media stuff, do interviews and be unique about them. Because, like, I mean, at least from my perspective, my goal has always been, like I said earlier, to kind of cater to scouts and agents and media people. And hopefully, you know, traffic follows that. Whether or not it does, it's up for discussion. But hopefully that's always kind of the approach I've taken. But I think for people who want to work, I learned this just the past couple of months, just how widespread it is of people reading interviews. I think people who want to, you know, get eyeballs on their site or just attention to themselves and build that ever important brand, interviews are surprisingly the best way to do that, which I'm going to do a lot more this year.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I kind of want to ask you a little bit more about that, because for one, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know that this is kind of my first experience interviewing anybody. it's a skill I'm trying to develop myself, but it takes a unique perspective to be able to kind of coax information out of people. What do you think makes a good interview, and what makes a maybe not so good interview with a draft prospect or anyone in particular?
Yeah, I mean, my experience in interviews is mostly, I don't do a lot for media side of things. I usually just talk to a lot of players and just kind of get my feeling on them, for mostly for our draft guide and kind of the character section of that. Talk to as many players as I can for that aspect. But my usual approach, and again, this isn't necessarily for media, is kind of that I can't believe he asked me that question to players. I really go for the kind of brutally honest or shocking question just to see how they react. And you can kind of get a feeling. I mean, the biggest fear, I think it's discussed all the time, and for combine interviews, is, you know, how are guys overcoached for these questions? That's the biggest thing that I try to avoid, is kind of just get rid of those questions. So I'll ask the general questions. But I mean, the biggest thing I don't do is I never try to have over generic questions. You know, you read an interview on the internet of what's on your iPod or stuff like that. And those questions are fun, I guess, to start with, but I'm not interested in that as well. So I mean, my usual approach is I don't do the Q&A type of thing. I'll interview and then just, like, steal some quotes and kind of morph an article around that too. But I'm fascinated by kind of, like, getting guys out of their comfort zone and seeing who guys really are. And also, which is, I guess, not something most people can do, but try to talk to other people on the team or other scouts or other people who have talked to that player and kind of understand who that guy is ahead of time. So I didn't get a chance to talk to Connor Cook, but I would have a very prepared answer for Connor Cook. For example, talk with people as I have about him. So those are the kind of things that you have to glean beforehand. But I mean, I try to do a lot of research and I try to find really four or five questions only that I want to get the guy off balance and just be conversational. That's usually my thing, and try to be friendly with the guy, but also kind of like the brutally honest friend who's got a bone to pick a little bit and kind of find out what's going on in the player.
Yeah, well, we all need that friend, that's for sure. I would imagine that kind of, if Connor Cook's a good example, maybe as people were sitting there, you know, and you're like, and he's fallen down the draft, maybe somebody that's a little more plugged in like you is kind of like, well, yeah, maybe we shouldn't be so surprised at this, or maybe not, I don't really know. But do you have any specific example, like with a certain player that you can talk about and feel free to say no, but do you have any specific example you could reference, I guess, that you asked a player a question that caught him off balance, you were maybe surprised or not so surprised by his reaction?
Well, I talked to Braxton Miller for a while at the Senior Bowl. And I mean, first off, that guy was the most impressive interview I've had. I think him, Russell Wilson, clueless in, those are two best interviews I've ever had. Just guys I'm president, not just a first round pick. But I think, I had Braxton Miller, you know, who's a better quarterback, him or JT Barrett, who's a better quarterback, him or Cardale Jones, just to kind of see what he would react like. And I also have the third question, who's a better quarterback, you or any quarterback here at the Senior Bowl? Just to kind of see what, how you react there too. And for the Barron Cardale answers, he didn't say that he was less than those guys, which is kind of what I thought he might say. He might say, well, they're better than blah, blah, blah. But he kind of focused on more, said, first off, he had a scouting report for both guys, which is super impressive. More than just like, he's good, he's bad. I mean, he knew what Cardale had to work on, anticipation and feeling comfortable under pressure, off balance and making progressions. And JT Barrett's, you know, arm talent kind of lacking a little bit too. Stuff like that was super intriguing, but it was more so the confident yet not arrogant, which is kind of the fine line you have to walk. And you know, you want your players to be arrogant a little bit. But that's why I think Wilson and Braxton were so impressive at the end of my mind, is that they were so confident yet not to the point where I didn't want them on my team or to lead me. And that's, I think, the leadership dynamic, which I'm also fascinated by. I mean, I'm fascinated by character evaluations of players. My hope is if I have time one time to kind of write a book about all the character issues a guy's had over the years, because I'm fascinated by kind of how when football is such an on the field sport, how character can play a role on the field, off the field, guys that have success. You know, what happened with Joey Harrington in the locker room? Why didn't his teammates respond to him? Same for Blaine Gabbert. What happens when a quarterback loses that confidence? Stuff like that really fascinates me. And also kind of that bridge between confidence and arrogance, and somewhere in the middle is leadership, I believe. That's kind of where leadership comes from, is that bridge. So talking with those guys, I think Miller, going back to your question, Braxton Miller's kind of answer to that. So still being deferential that JT Barrett and Cardale Jones are really impressive players. And talk more about Cardale Jones and his work ethic, which I think he knew something about Cardale, but also having that confidence to say that he would clearly be the best quarterback at the Senior Bowl, or he would clearly be, you know, just as good as Barrett or Cardale Jones, but he did it as a business decision to be a receiver. So that was one of the most impressive ones I got this past year in interviews.
That's really fascinating. Man, I would read that book about the character issue stuff, because there's just so much that we don't know, or at least on my side of the aisle, and a lot, I mean, the public doesn't know.
And I'm fascinated by how teams value those things, right? Because every team's different. And that's what I'm curious about, too, is to kind of see how teams, you know, evaluate character. I mean, the Tunsil example this year was kind of the grade A question mark. It's like, how do you evaluate that on the fly? I remember, I mean, you know, we're all, obviously Twitter is so important. And I remember that happening. And I'm thinking, I'm opened up Twitter, like, I'm going to give my response. And I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to respond to that. I'm not capable mentally to handle that all in that kind of whirlwind.
Yeah, no. When that happened, I was actually watching with two other guys that have worked with you, Ethan Harriman and Derek Klassen. We're out in LA for the draft, and we were watching it. We went out to eat and we came back, and the draft's about to start. I pulled my laptop up and opened Twitter, and I saw that video, and I remember looking at those two guys being like, I don't even know what to tell you I just saw, but you have to see this. That was one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
And I think the shot, I mean, and that's the interesting part too, is that, you know, the fact that he was smoking marijuana shouldn't be the concern. Mm-hmm. I think I tweeted out, but from people, and I kind of corroborate this after the fact too. I mean, I know for a fact at least a handful of the top 10 picks, you know, smoked marijuana in the last two, 3 years, probably the last year. So, I mean, marijuana use isn't shocking. But I think just kind of how teams evaluated that guy. I mean, it comes down to still being, I still call that a character issue, is that kind of what's going on behind the scenes? What does this mean moving forward? We don't know about the issues. And that comfortability with and confidence in your locker room is so unique. So I don't think the Ravens really passed. I think only a handful of teams really passed on Tunsil and kind of stuck to their script. But, you know, it's fascinating, I think, at least from my angle, that story, and then the Dan Marino fall story, the war story that's contributed to that. What were the real stories? Because the real stories shouldn't come out, because sometimes it's difficult to really discuss those things publicly or in the moment. But, you know, kind of what really happens there. And Ryan Leaf is a story example too. But I think Connor Cook can be an example that we can talk about for a while to say, hey, this guy was, you know, had the ideal size. His arm talent was good, not great. He ran a pro-style offense. He did so much. And, you know, we can go into more if you'd like to, but I'm not sure you want to. But, you know, there are plenty of stories of Connor Cook and why there's a real character concern. I think at the end of the day, that kind of won out for teams saying, no thanks, we'll pass on a quarterback or go elsewhere, which is fascinating to me too, because quarterback is obviously the most important position.
Yeah, no, feel free to spin on that for a while.
I mean, the Connor Cook stuff, you know, it's a teammate issue. You know, his center, Jack Allen, yelling at him multiple times in games to, you know, shut the F up, just run the play. His teammates kind of having that kind of scrap in a way that you can relate to as a college kid, but kind of that guy you know he's a cool guy, you know you want to go out with him and drink, but you don't really want to hang out with him outside of that. That's kind of the feeling of Connor Cook. That kind of, I mentioned that confidence, arrogance, way on the side of arrogance. His parents were influencing him, influencing other parents didn't like his parents, which led to issues on the field. I mean, stuff like that. It was just kind of a lingering thing that you can imagine only happens in high school, happened at the pro level. And, you know, I've learned that parents are oddly a big example, a big issue. So I talked to one scout, now retired, who said his team, and I went in the team too, cause it's a bit of a weird theory. But he had the dad test, and he would ask a player, you know, tell him about your family, two or three questions. And how many times he wouldn't listen to the answer, really. He would just listen how many times the guy said dad or father, and more times, whether it was my dad's been great in my life, my dad's been super important, or my dad wasn't there, I blame my dad, would write down how many times that said, and that was indicative. I think that kind of over-parental influence, I know, has impacted guys getting drafted, nonetheless guys falling in the draft too. So there's a lot of concerns with Connor Cook. You know, I've had my past. His mother called me, didn't like a story I had wrote about him. So she had found my number and called me. And that was an interesting discussion that I kind of sat through. But I felt I owed it to at least listen to her and get mad at me. But, sure, you know, I don't want to say I was vindicated a little bit, but I you know, I talked to other people. I talked to Matt Miller. I'm saying, hey, is my stuff way off here? Are you wearing the same stuff? And he kind of said, yeah, you're in the same stuff. And I called other people too, other people in the league, just to kind of corroborate that. But it's such a weird, I mean, again, I can't say enough how fascinated I am by that whole dynamic, because it's, we think of football in terms of fantasy perspective and how guys are going to do them. And you watch film and you can see the traits. And the character side of things for a lot of teams is so important. And it's always been described to me as it's a job interview. Yeah. And it's draft process. It's a 6-month job interview. And just like any job interview, it's that first impression or the second impression that makes a difference. And your resume says one thing, but you know, I think people want to get hired mostly, unless they have a great resume, based off of their interview and how they are as a person. And sometimes guys fail that, and still a job interview in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, I would always say, like, my resume has pretty much sucked, like, throughout my job process, like, job searches and everything. But I've always said, like, get me in the room with somebody, and I will get any job if you give me an interview. And I've mostly done that so far in my life. That interview process is incredibly important, and it's why we see, like, you know, draft Twitter, and people get confused, like, why a prospect like Carson Wentz is getting, you know, vaunted up the draft boards, but he's exactly the type of guy you want to hire. I mean, right? Yeah. Like, that's the perspective I look at it as. And I thought one of your comments there was really poignant about, like, Connor Cook being a guy that you would, you know, being that guy that, you know, you would want to go out and party with, but maybe, like, you would want to go out to a bar with, have a drink with, but nothing beyond that. I mean, I had friends in college. I think we've all had friends that I would love to go, like, out on the town with them, but I would not want to wake up at their place, you know, Saturday morning and, like, have to go to brunch and have a conversation with them.
Exactly. You
know, like, there are guys that you're cool to roll with, but like, that's it. Or like, there's a clear ceiling to your friendship. And I think that stuff matters when you're just, I mean, when you're an ass, you're an ass, and nobody really wants to be around you.
Yeah. And that arrogant dynamic is so unique too. I mean, quarterback always gets the most attention, but I think it's at every position too. And again, I mean, it's, and I can't blame teams for doing this. It's really a, hey, it's an interview, and this guy's going to be a part of our organization, especially for a top 2 round pick. You're expecting that guy to be a starter or a high level starter, and that guy's got to be one of the faces of your locker room for the next 10 years, which, I mean, thinking that far ahead is sometimes naive, but you can't not plan for that. So if you're going to take Connor Cook in the first 2 rounds, he's either going to bust and you waste your draft pick and maybe you're fired, or he hits and you're dealing with that guy for 8, 10 years. So I think dealing with the guy is where the issue comes from. So guys don't need to be, you know, these great leaders or these, you know, well-spoken guys. That's not really important. Or guys you want to hang out with. It's more about do you trust this guy to not only do stuff, not do issues off the field, but also feel confident in the locker room that he's not going to, you know, make a mess of the whole situation.
That's really fascinating. And it helps just to bring some of like your real life understanding like that into football when you're being an analyst or when you're looking at situations. Think about things how you would approach it from a real life perspective, like your group of friends or a job, that sort of thing. It's important as an evaluator to do that. Kind of spinning off this a little bit, and you know, you mentioned when you're watching tape and everything like that. Obviously, more than what you do at Optimum Scouting, beyond the character evaluation part of it and beyond what you're doing behind the scenes, you know, you guys watch you guys watch a ton of players. You put a lot of effort, a lot of eyes onto a lot of different guys. You personally, what's one of your kind of main pillars of scouting and watching players and something that you look for?
As far as the trade evaluation or just the whole process in general?
Both.
Yeah, I mean, the process in general is this is something that I did, I guess, a couple of years ago for Optimum Scouting. It's really to kind of play that director of scouting role, and that I'll watch as many teams as I can, even if it's just once or twice, kind of in the preseason, early season, or in season, and then have the discussion. I'm a huge proponent of the discussion aspect of scouting. I think kind of bouncing ideas off each other, playing devil's advocate, and willing to kind of learn and adapt your own opinion, have conviction, but also have your, you know, you have your feelings be adjusted based off of other people's, what they've saw, and you're not going to watch the same game ever. You know, even NFL teams don't watch, except for quarterbacks, usually every game of a player. So kind of talking about players is super important. So I think that's something I've tried to at least institute, and I've hopefully gotten better at it the last couple of years, is really talking through a lot of players as much as possible. But I think, I mean, my plan usually in the course of the season is right now I'll be watching, you know, say I'm watching quarterbacks. The next 2 days I almost got through most top quarterbacks, senior quarterbacks. Then I'll do a lot of small school stuff first, because small school stuff is something that we do a lot for our clients. And also it's kind of best to get those guys early on. There's not that many players to watch in terms of focusing on. You kind of watch them one time through, see a guy you want to look at and move forward from there. But it's a little less intensive. But that's kind of usually my process to move towards the FBS guys closer to the start of the season. But kind of one of my biggest play when I scout, especially quarterbacks or top end players, I just kind of like to watch 2 games, just kind of write through almost without notes. Kind of like I'll take a note here or there as far as something to go back on. Anymore, I've gotten them out of taking notes of timestamps just for GIF purposes or GIF purposes, however you pronounce it. Just cause that's such a big thing now. And it's a cool way to kind of talk about a point. But outside of that, I'll kind of watch two or three games kind of right through once we're in draft season, especially in November, December, January, before Senior Bowl. And then I'll kind of go back and pick out a few plays or focus on a few things in particular. But my biggest approach is, and I think some scouting reports do this well, and NFL teams reports do it well too, is kind of pick out like 5 or 6 points on a guy, and less about, is he good at this or bad at this? Is he great at this or okay at this? I mean, using those adjectives is kind of always a weird thing. But, you know, my thing is kind of like, what are 5 or 6 things this guy does that's unique, that doesn't do anything else? And I try to find those as quickly as I can, and then kind of hone on those and see if they're really important. Kind of an example top of my head. But certainly, I mean, you watch a lot of receivers, obviously, and you can go for days and say, I mean, people say too much, he's a good route runner, bad route runner. And that's not really, doesn't say anything at all. As I said, reception stuff really points out. And I tell all the guys, there's going to be 2 more interns at Optimum Scouting this year, at least. And I actually told them all to read reception, because I think it's a great look and kind of better understanding of receivers, because it's where can a guy have a route success. And I think Corey Coleman was the best example of that this year. It's kind of like, all right, he doesn't run a whole lot of routes, and it's going to take some time, but why can't you just work with those to start? I think Cleveland will do that. And then also Sterling Shepard, the kind of converse of that, a guy who runs so many routes effectively, kind of decide, all right, what's the really benefits going to be? How's that going to work in a new offense? So I think route running is a perfect example. I kind of find 2 or 3 routes a receiver runs really well, both as whether it's separation, whether it's his balance and going to the catch point, things like that. And the last thing I wish I'd do, and it's something I'm also fascinated by, which I want to do more articles. Each year I did one for Optimum Scouting this year, which was great, but kind of playing the devil's advocate. Because I love kind of playing like, all right, why shouldn't, I remember back at the time too, why shouldn't Andrew Luck be the top overall pick? Not saying, not trying to be, you know, Skip Bayless hot take, you know, why this guy sucks, but more so kind of saying, all right, well, no prospect's perfect. We all know that. So why isn't he perfect? Where's he going to struggle early on? And those kind of things I'm also fascinated by too. I try to do those early on in the process too, to kind of keep an even keel on where a guy's, you know, instead of going strengths, weaknesses, know where the guy does well, but also put the devil's advocate on why that guy might not work in the NFL.
Well, during that answer, you definitely checked off requirement number one of all guests, which is to compliment me. So I appreciate that, so that we can move on for sure. But no, I think that's really important. Like, you know, obviously from a route running perspective, that's one thing that always really frustrated me reading scouting reports and still does. And why I do what I do is because, like, you just hear somebody say, like, oh, he's a good route runner, or I grade his route running, you know, a 5 out of 7 or a 7 out of 10. I'm like, well, you know, what the hell does that really mean? Or can you take that to another level, I guess? And so that's what I try to do. And I think that, you know, Optimum Scouting, like, if you have, for one, if you haven't bought any of the Optimum Scouting draft guides, go buy the one that I was writing in. No, but seriously, go buy the most recent one. It was, actually, don't buy the one I read, because that'll tell you how good Devontae Davis was, and he's not in the NFL. That's whenever Eric, it's really funny, because I was obviously working with you when I discovered, in serious air quotes, Devontae Davis. But it's good though, because anytime anybody asks me who's your biggest miss, I always have a quick answer to give them right away. But so anyway, it was my point here was that if you read the Optimum Scouting draft guide, there's a ton of really detailed qualifications, you know, for how things are graded, how the checklist goes, and, you know, quantifying traits and qualitative realities of how the football player plays in the field is really important to me. So I think that you guys do a great job of that, and it's something that people should definitely learn from. And one thing that I think I learned from Optimum Scouting, and that really helped me in terms of still today watching tape and watching college prospects, is that you encouraged us all to, you know, go out and find full games and watch full games of players. Don't just necessarily, and there's, you know, there's a place for going on to Draft Breakdown and watching the cutups and then just shooting from the hip after that. Like, there's definitely some merit to that. But in terms of detailed process of watching film, because that's a question I get from listeners a lot. I actually just got an email last week from a listener that was just pretty much saying, like, how do I watch tape? You know, do I just watch highlights? Should I go buy NFL Game Pass and watch all 22 film? Like, I think you really did a good job of instilling in me and everybody else that writes there how to, you know, like, watch a full game, which I don't think people really know how to do sometimes.
Yeah, thanks, Draft Breakdown. Just kind of killing film study entirely. Cool. So selfish of them. But no, I mean, and I think I appreciate this too. I think everyone watches Draft Breakdown at some point because it's so convenient, which is unbelievable. But I think that's some of the at least from my perspective, this time of year, in season, watching full games is something I try to do entirely. And so, I mean, when things come up, when you're writing an article on a guy, you want to look more Draft Breakdown film, or you want to do that kind of that route. There's a place for that. But I think the full game stuff is something that I still do. And I think that comes from, you know, a lot of what we do is databasing, as you know. So the database stuff, you have to watch the whole game. You have to watch the full game for, you know, 8-9 players at a time. And sometimes it's inefficient to watch a full game and kind of track 10 guys at once. And that's something I appreciate, but that's kind of what Blesto and National Scouts are doing, or they did this past offseason. They're the team, they're the scouting service that work for NFL teams that are scouting the junior class. People don't know, they're scouting the junior class a year in advance. So I think comes out in late June, the NFL teams, maybe earlier, they get a list of the top senior players across the country, but they're watching without any people talking about these players. They're watching film, just kind of get an overall perspective of these guys and then NFL teams. And that's kind of what I think we want to do too, and we do, is have this real overview of guys too. So watching full game film, you can't get the nuance of a position. You have to kind of watch more. Either you can watch, you know, 8 full games, or after a couple games, you can watch the Draft Breakdown stuff and kind of hone in on a guy. But I'm a big fan of kind of watching full film, and I think a lot of people do that anymore, which is fine. And I think for draft Twitter and a lot of the NFL draft articles you want to write, Draft Breakdown is perfectly fine. But yeah, I'm still a big fan of that, so I appreciate that. I think a lot of our guys still do that, and thankfully, the sites like you know, ESPN or watch ESPN now. Watch ESPN, it's called. I still type in ESPN3 every time. Or whether it's Noon Kick, I think it's .com or .se now, or place you could download stuff, or just kind of asking for film from schools. That aspect, I think, is kind of a dying breed, except for people who have a kind of all 22 access to every game, which we don't. We've gotten more, thankfully, but not the same as the guys at ESPN NFL Network has. But, you know, and I say, too, I know this for a fact, I'll just say one of the major networks that covers the NFL draft, their guys didn't have, you know, all 22 film up until about 5-6 years ago. So just watching TV film, you know, it's certainly harder to watch cornerbacks and safeties and have a great feel for quarterback progressions and things like that. We all appreciate that, but you can still get a lot out of it. And I think that's the best way to kind of learn. That's how I learned as a scout, to at least hopefully develop a little bit and be proficient at it, just kind of watching full games and just taking notes globally and generally, and then kind of having my opinions be adjusted as I kind of learned more as I went.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's nice now working for NFL Network. I definitely have a lot more access to film.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, right. Humble brag. But I remember back in those days, you know, having to scrounge for things and everything, and it's cool, you know, and it's all part of like the growing process of an analyst, you know. And, you know, I definitely do not mean to shit on draft breakdown at all. Like, not totally.
No, of course. I mean, of course.
None of us would be doing what we're doing, or a lot of us would not, without their assistance. I mean, they're a huge, huge resource. And I definitely plan on having, like, Brian Perez and other people from the site on the podcast at some point to talk about what they do there, because it's important. But it's all part of the growing process, like finding – going from cut-ups to full games to this, that, and the other. It's cool, and it's all part of it. Eric, you guys at Optimum Scouting obviously have a lot of partnerships that maybe some people don't even know about, but you guys are, you know, you're partnered with Sporting News, I know, and several of the All-Star games. How do you kind of grow those relationships and develop those sort of partnerships?
We'll have more coming soon, hopefully months, but you know, I think for Sporting News, they had a need. I know Russ Landy, he was there for a little bit. He bounced around a lot before. I guess I'm not sure where he's with Montreal now, in the CFL, but they had a need and we reached out, and that's kind of made that partnership too. A couple other places we're looking at too, but I mean, the biggest benefit I have in working with Sporting News is great. They're a great team there. They're kind of a morphing media company right now. They used to be so big in magazines. People still tell me that are older than I, when they really appreciated the Sporting News magazines and how they were the global leader in kind of Sporting News publications. And now they're, you know, kind of more of a, I guess, what, fourth, fifth tier website ranking, which is still not to knock them at all. It's just a changing tide of the industry. But they're great to work with. And they're great about having a lot of Optimum Scouting writers right on there too. It's not just me. It's kind of, they get the whole team part of it. And all their scouting boards are powered by Optimum Scouting, which is great too. So kind of being powered, powering, I guess, is the way they kind of phrase it. Powering Sporting News' draft coverage is certainly cool too. But the biggest thing, I mean, I really do love working with the All-Star games we work with, and the Dream Bowl is one we work with the last 3 years. That's about our third year. And it's a small All-Star game. People don't know it yet, which I can certainly understand. There's the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Game, the NFLPA, and then after that, it's kind of like whatever for most people. But it's a huge part of the football industry. CFL teams use that almost entirely to scout American players. NFL teams use that entirely to kind of get takes on guys. And it's hard to watch. I mean, there's All-Star games. There's, what, 3 All-Star games, NFLPA, Shrine Game, Senior Bowl. That's about 300 players. Then there's probably 3 or 4 other decent-sized All-Star games. That's 600 guys. If you're a team, you can get access to 600 guys just by going to 6 different events. That's a huge benefit for teams, too. So I love working with them. I got a lot of hands-on experience with the media side of things, the business side of things, working with teams, getting their recommendations, and then kind of seeing the whole process unfold. And, you know, I think the most rewarding part is keeping in touch with all the players and kind of tracking their progress through the season. We had 3 guys who were – kind of work, or 4 guys who were like workout warriors at our combine. They were a top Zach Whitman's 3 Sigma athlete, page 2, and kind of had great combine workouts. They got NFL interest there too. And then we all had 2 guys who were very close to being drafted, which would have been great. But the biggest benefit, I think, is that the game's growing, and I'm thankful I have a lot of great people in that game. So not to promote the game a little bit too, but I'm super excited about where it's going for next year. We're going to have 2 games, not 1. We're going to do a lot more. And having someone who's like super committed to helping players, the guy in charge, Neil Malvone, I always busts his balls, but he's a guy who doesn't even like making money on this kind of thing. He puts as much in as he can to kind of help guys. He loves D2 and D3 football. I can't explain why, but he loves it. And I get to be a part of something to help it grow a little bit too, and kind of have a positive influence on players getting the NFL, which is kind of the dream that most people want to have. So that's a cool thing to do, but certainly sporting news, like I said, I'll put some more stuff in the future too, but I try to keep myself busy, man. I mean, people know the sports media industry, and unless you're lucky enough to work at NFL.com, like yourself, no, but people appreciate that. It's hard to work in sports media. There's only a handful of spots out there and only a handful of quote unquote NFL draft experts. So it's important, I think, today's day and age to wear as many hats as you can. And that's kind of my plan. Also a chance to give everyone out from scouting a chance to do a lot of cool stuff, whether it's working with NFL teams, working with CFL teams, working with agents, working with all-star games, and then also writing for Optimum Scouting, writing for Sporting News, writing for other partners, working on the draft guide. Hopefully it gives a lot of cool experiences about the process.
Yeah, man, I think you touched on several things there that really embody something that I strongly believe in as an analyst and that I appreciate in people that I follow is, you know, just not being the story, but being like a part of the story, you know, and Optimum mm-hmm. Scouting being a part of other analyst stories, you know, and also, you know, just as you mentioned, like getting to know the guys and like being a part of their story to succeeding in the NFL is so cool, you know, and it's not about like, it's not about Eric Galco or it's not about Matt Harmon, you know, it's about the player and just being like kind of associated with that. Like, that's a cool feeling. I mean, cause it's their dream getting realized and it's just fun to like kind of play a little role in being like, you know, a spectator to that.
Yeah. I mean, in 4 or 5 years, you know, I'll be honest, most of the guys at the Dream Bowl that do go work in the NFL, they won't be there in 5 years. You know, I've been doing this for 10 years now. I'll probably last them longer in the league, but I think that ability to kind of have a role and kind of someone realizing their dream is such a cool thing. I mean, these guys are just, and people forget that too. A lot of these, especially smaller school players, they're just fans of the NFL draft and the NFL like we are too. They're just bigger, better football at it, and they get to play a little bit, but they still love the process. They still love talking football. They still love talking about how good Odell Beckham Jr. is or stuff like that. They try to go out there and be like Odell Beckham Jr., a guy, Chester Rogers, had a one-handed catch of the All-Star game. He was chin ODB afterwards, and he's the Colts now. But, I mean, they're still just fans who are just better football than us too. So kind of being with those guys and watching through the process is so cool. And then – you know, as NFL teams, we had, eight NFL teams there in just our second year at the game, which was cool. And having teams kind of go there and seeing these guys and kind of having teams say like, hey, we didn't know about this guy before, but I'm glad you brought him in. We might take him now. And the Jets had two scouts at the Dream Bowl, and then they signed five of our guys themselves just because they had value out of it. So that's kind of the cool thing, too, is kind of saying that, you know, you're helping an NFL team find a guy, helping the player get a match and go from there, too. So I don't want to talk too much. I'm not trying to promote the game at all. But it's the thing I get most excited about working with, because the media stuff will come and go. We can do a mock draft that as possible. But kind of doing that stuff is the coolest thing I think people out from scouting get a chance to work on.
Tremendous. Yeah. And hey, listen, if any podcast is okay with self-promotion, it's Matt Harmon's podcast. My life is like 65% self-promotion, which is gross sometimes, but hey, you got to do what you got to do in this sphere. Speaking of this sphere, Eric, kind of winding down a little bit here, I've been asking the guests recently, what's something that you see in the community, and obviously we've actually talked to more fantasy football people lately, but so this about the draft community for you, what's something that you see out there that you don't really like or you wish was different?
Well, I think, and this is something that I want to do a lot more, is the analytics side of things. I think people should do more analytics, but I think I'm fascinated by it because I still want to learn a lot in the kind of community. And you know, reading perception, reading Derek Klassen's quarterback stuff. I mean, I'm more in the sense of I want to kind of pick brains out about what's working. I think NFL teams are kind of the same way too. They acknowledge there's a lot of stuff that they don't know about football yet, and the analytics revolution. I mean, analytics have been in the NFL much longer than people appreciate. You know, I know Joe Banner, who's the president of the Browns and the Eagles. He's like, we were doing this stuff 20 years ago. I mean, stuff's been around for a while, but mm-hmm. I think teams now are more open to kind of allowing outside sources and, you know, getting feedback on the draft guide about Derek Klassen's work, or Anthony Shadow's work, or Charles McDonald's work, or RF Hassan's. You know, his combine stuff was awesome because teams are I kind of asking questions. They're like, this is very cool. I want to do more of that too. So I think my biggest, and I guess I don't follow draft Twitter as much as other people do too. But I think sometimes people get too conclusory with their opinions and kind of just assume that they're NFL draft expert or they have their guys, and that's great. But I think we've kind of, I think some ways, gone away from being okay to learn these things. The NFL scouts aren't the end all be all. We shouldn't take their word as gospel, or people in the media, but just kind of have an appreciation that it's an imperfect process, scouting. And I always try to learn a lot. I try to tackle things that I know and have a discussion about. I wrote an article about a backup quarterback and how that's role in the draft process. That kind of thing is something I'm fascinated in. But also, I want to hear feedback from both teams and people in the media. And I think people can be a bit more open-minded on those kind of things too. I've seen a handful of articles after the draft process, and draft grades are the best indictment of that, right? This team sucked. This team was good. Let's not be so conclusory about those kind of things. That's the thing I appreciate too. So, I mean, Derek is far younger than I am, and he's one of the most impressive guys I speak with all the time. And I think his brain about quarterbacks so much too. So I've been doing it longer than he has, and I will still pick his brain about every quarterback prospect I can, because he's smart at that kind of stuff, but I want to learn and get better at it. So, and I don't want to keep saying Derek, because Derek does the quarterback stuff, which is sexy, but same thing for Anthony and Charles as well. But talking to those guys about their analytics stuff and then where they focus so much of their time, I'm open to learning. So I hope people at least are open to kind of learning so much and having different opinions and improving their opinion, I guess, is the best way to phrase it, which is a bit counterintuitive, but my opinion on guys is not right now. And I'll talk to Derek probably on my drive here in a little bit about different quarterback prospects 2017, because I think he's probably a better, he's better quarterback scout than I am. And we'll have a discussion about it and talk more about those guys.
Yeah, for sure. Derek Klassen is at QB Class on Twitter.
Thank you.
He's a good guy. We actually, like I said, we got to meet a couple weeks ago to watch the draft together. He's definitely one of the better young, not only writers, and I say young, like I'm 24 years old, so he's a little bit younger than me, but you know, he's really good. He's a good writer, for one, which is important, and I continue to harp on that on the podcast, that you like have to be a reasonably decent writer to be a football writer. There's a point there. But also, yeah, like you mentioned, great quarterback evaluations. Like, definitely check him out if you listen to podcasts. You have not, you don't follow him already. But you mentioned other guys, Charles McDonald, Anthony Chiodo. Like, what does it take to build a team like that? Because I think that's one thing that, you know, Optimum Scouting is great about, is it is a team effort. And, you know, you've got guys covering different conferences, covering different positions. What does it take to kind of formulate that team? Like, not only finding the guys on Twitter or having them apply, but then realizing who's good, who's going to fit us, and then also just managing it from various ends of the country.
Yeah, I mean, the wide-ranging stuff is always interesting, right? Because we have guys all over the country all the time, too. And I don't want to discount Christian Page, too. Austin Bomber, I want to just mention those guys, too. Christian Page was awesome this year, too, for Optimum Scouting, and Austin Bomber, guys like that. But, I mean, I reached out to Derek. So last year, yourself, Ian Wharton went to Bleacher Report more full-time. Alex Brown went to University of Houston. Mark Dugan went to NFL Network. You know, we lost four of our best guys, yourself included. So it was a bit of a scramble to kind of find the next people I can work with. Yeah. I don't find draft Twitter as close as some people. I'm not as frequent on Twitter as maybe I should be anymore, but I certainly follow a lot of the other work for a while. And Derek's a guy I spoke with before on Twitter, but I followed the stuff for a while. And Anthony Chiodo's Pressure Production, Charles Manal stuff at the Falcon website, I kind of stumbled upon a while back too. But, you know, I like to work with people, like I said, I think are smarter than me, and at least some aspect, if not the whole aspect of scouting. So that's why I kind of found those guys too. And I try to follow a lot of people who I think are really smart that I kind of encounter on social media. And just reach out to them and connect with them. And then if something opens up, we have a needed Optimum Scouting, which we're working through right now. I'll go through there. But there's also, you know, also people who aren't on Twitter, which are so many people who are great at evaluating football who aren't on Twitter. I think people kind of assume that Twitter is the representative of all, you know, football minds, or I guess all minds on the internet. And it's not necessarily true. So I'll go through emails of people who are interested in kind of getting their foot in the door in scouting. But, you know, there's a lot of really smart guys. And we had a guy just last year who reached out to me via email, not on Twitter at all, and worked with us for a year. And also, while working with Optimum Scouting, also made a connection with a current NFL GM and is now a scout with the Tennessee Titans. So I think there's a lot of ways to kind of get into the football industry, not just talking on social media, just by being active and networking and you know, doing scouting stuff for a purpose. But you know, I think I've gotten lucky. Certainly working with yourself and Mark and Alex and Ian the year before, and guys in the past too, Chris Tripati. Justice was with us for a year before he kind of did his own thing as well, and he's done awesome stuff too. I still follow him and talk to him all the time. But there's a lot of smart people out there, and my only hope is that Optimum Scouting can be a worthwhile kind of pit stop before people go to bigger and better things. And hopefully in the meantime, you can hopefully grow as a scout, do some stuff you won't do anyplace else, and go from there too. But I've mostly gotten lucky in finding a lot of great people. There's a lot of smart people out there. I try to find the smartest people I follow on Twitter or I get emails from and go from there too. So hopefully next year, whether, you know, Derek moves, I mean, Derek's had a great job now at Turf Showtime. He's going to do a lot of good stuff there with the Ram stuff that they're doing. But, I want to get guys going as place they can. And you yourself did your own thing for NFL.com, but other guys have kind of helped out with and finding jobs in football in the future, including the guys with the Tennessee Titans or whoever else. So there's a lot of ways to get to where you want to go in the football world, whether it's media or coaching or scouting. And hopefully Optimum Scouting is kind of a pit stop for some guys, because there's a lot of great talent on the internet and out there who want to scout football.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm glad that you mentioned the idea that you don't have to necessarily just come up through social media. I always say that to people, like, get on Twitter and start talking, because that was my experience. But like you mentioned, yeah, there's talent elsewhere, and I think that's important to mention. And definitely, you talk about guys like Derek Klass, and, you know, I mentioned him, QB Klass, Charles McDonald at Sunday Fiasco, which is still a stupid username, but whatever. Anthony Chiodo's at It Me Anthony, which is also kind of stupid too. Now I'm upset that I'm shouting all these guys out with their stupid usernames. But anyways, follow all those guys, because they're great. Optimum Scouting is building up a great team, and I'm happy that all those guys have a voice with a hashtag brand that I trust. Eric, really want to thank you for your time here. This has been fantastic. Kind of closing out here, I always give the guest one last opportunity at the floor here to pretty much say whatever you want before I yank it out from under you. So go ahead, close us out here.
Like an ending a monologue here.
A lot of pressure.
Well, I'll just say we're starting on the 2017 class right now too, and I think the scouting process in the off season is probably my favorite time to scout, to be honest, because there's actually no opinions out there. So my favorite thing to do is kind of talk with other guys on our staff, and I have a talk with Anthony and Derek and a couple other guys on the staff too, to kind of do a lot of our preseason stuff too. But it's my favorite time to scout, because there's no opinions out there, and I can kind of fire hot takes at people, not necessarily social media, but just people via text message, because I'm too scared for the reaction on social media sometimes about saying, like, this quarterback sucks or this guy's good. But I think this is my favorite time of the year to scout, which sounds odd, but May and June end up being probably two of the busier months for myself by design, because I love kind of this preseason scouting stuff too. But I'm super excited to work with guys like Derek again and Anthony again and scout for the 2017 draft too. But yeah, man, I got nothing else to say besides that monologue there too, except I'm excited for 2017. It's weird to start so early, but I don't want to do it myself for the most part. And there's always work to be done. And hopefully, you know, a lot of our stuff will be done by mid to late June. We can kind of chill for a little bit in July and August for NFL training camps. But, you know, I've been thankful, like I said, work with people, great people at Optimum Scouting for a while. And hopefully there's more endeavors coming up. Fingers crossed a couple of things kind of fall through with some big opportunities for Optimum Scouting and our team. But I'm excited for 2017 just like I was for 2016. And hopefully guys in Optimum Scouting can kind of grow to places that yourself and Alex, Brian, and Mark DeGarian have gone to. That's always the hope, is that I'll be able to text you and ask you for information now that you're at a bigger and better job. And same for Alex and Mark and guys like that too. It's always great to see people kind of succeed in the industry. And there's not that many jobs out there in sports media or in the football world in general. And I think it's important to kind of people keep an even mind about that and be patient. Derek's been great at that too. I know he was looking to maybe do something else, but he's kind of stayed with sports media, and I think he's going to do awesome stuff. And same for Anthony and Charles. And I want to make sure Christian Page gives a shout out too. He did a lot of great work. I didn't mention him too much in the podcast, but he does great stuff too for Optimum Scouting, and he'll be a big part of what we're doing next year too. So not to be cheesy, but I'm super excited to work with a lot of these guys again next year and what we have coming for 2017. And hopefully it's just as good as it was this past year.
Hey man, staying patient and staying excited are two incredibly important themes when it comes to chasing the stream in sports media or any sort of writing venture. There's no doubt about that. Those are those are pretty key pillars to success. So, Eric, again, thank you so much for coming on. This has been fantastic. I mean, there's a lot of really good things that people can take away from what you discussed here today. And to the listeners, always appreciate you tuning in. The interest in the podcast is always very shocking to me, and I really appreciate you guys tuning in. If you could continue to leave ratings, reviews on iTunes or your podcast app, those things are always very important. As Eric mentioned, there's the self-promotion that we're all about here on the Backyard Banter podcast. So thank you guys so much for listening today, and I hope you learned something.